We ended our previous episode with our COVID pyramid, built layer upon layer of lies, deceit, fraud and scandals. Now, of course, you're wondering by now, how come so many hospitals, doctors and healthcare workers in general went along with all of the above? Can a scam so huge be kept a secret by so many people? We have reached the capstone of our nauseating COVID pyramid. We shall name the capstone M&M, Money and Murder in Hospitals. Shocking as it may sound, we've seen it before. Remember the unjust administering of the killer drug midazolam in the UK, as shown in part 19? Well, the US and many other countries had their own version called remdesivir. Here's what happened. Hospitals were given incentives, as in money, for each and every COVID casualty. According to whistleblowers, investigative journalists, lawyers, and specialists, hospitals in the US have been receiving $13,000 for every admitted COVID patient. There have been financial extras for every COVID test, for every positive outcome. If patients were treated with the only prescribed drug, remdesivir, the hospital received yet another bonus, 20% of the entire hospital bill of the patient. Then, for every patient put on a ventilator, the hospital received $39,000. And if that patient officially died of COVID-19, they got yet another $13,000. That's a lot of money. According to attorney Thomas Renz and CMS whistleblowers, the hospitals receive approximately $100,000 per COVID casualty if the above protocol was followed. Now the thing is, the American hospitals receive this money in advance, based on the COVID predictions, based on the flawed models of people like Burks. If the hospitals didn't actually meet those models, they had to pay that money back at a later stage. And we're talking millions of dollars here. So, what happened? Everybody who was admitted to a hospital, for instance because of a car accident, or because of cancer, or diabetes, or kidney failure, everybody got a PCR test to start with. Due to the ridiculous amount of cycles, there was an abundance of false positives. False positives equals positives, equals COVID patients, equals money. Hence the sudden rise in COVID patients. Then, remdesivir left its detrimental mark, just like midazolam had done in the UK. You see, remdesivir is not a new drug. It was used in 2018 during the West African Ebola outbreak. It was known to have severe adverse effects, such as kidney damage, liver damage, and even death. Yet, in 2020, Anthony Fauci directed that remdesivir was to be the drug hospitals used to treat COVID-19, hence the incentives. So, what happened next? Those poor patients only got worse, after which they were put on a ventilator. After all, that was yet another bonus of many thousands of dollars pouring straight into the pockets of the hospitals. Now, the problem with ventilators is that the patient is put into an induced coma. His or her breathing is taken over by a machine that puts extra pressure on the lungs, called baropressure. In the case of damaged lungs due to, for instance, pneumonia, those lungs will only get worse. They will not be able to deal with the increased pressure. the chances of that patient recovering, of being able to be taken off the ventilator and to start breathing by himself, are very, very small. Combined with organ failure as a result of remdesivir, the chances of that patient ever leaving the hospital alive are next to nothing.
There is a product which is proven to cause renal failure and hepatic injury. Doctors continue to give the product, causing more kidney injury. I have over 500 publications on kidney injury. I'm telling you, it contributes to death without a doubt. That is mass psychosis.
Is Dr. McCullough correct? Is it mass psychosis? Or are we talking murder here? Mass murder, genocide. We think so. Why? Because the hospitals knew. The incentives were simply too massive to reject. Man's biggest temptation was deployed by the cabal, the almighty dollar. We have learned from history that not many people are capable of saying no. And so, hospitals, medical doctors, specialists, even nurses succumb to temptation and sold their soul to the highest bidder. Not all of them, thank God. Those who followed their heart and remained true to their oath of Hippocrates to help those in need are now called whistleblowers. Thanks to them, we can tell you what happened behind closed doors.
There's a financial incentive to call somebody COVID positive. The hospitals receive a bonus from the government if someone is hospitalized and able to be declared COVID positive. They also receive a bonus. I think the total is something like $30,000 in incentive if somebody gets put on the vent. Then they get a bonus if somebody is declared dead with COVID. So they have an incentive at the front end to declare somebody COVID case. The CDC made a determination that they were going to make a core assumption: if PCR positive and you die, that is death due to COVID. So the extreme example, just to show the absurdity, if the patient comes in with a bullet hole to the head and they do a nose swab and they come up PCR positive, they're determined to have died from COVID when in fact they died from lead poisoning.
That's real?
Yeah.
So that it really is true that if someone has a gunshot wound and they're dying of that gunshot wound and you check them for COVID, and if they're COVID positive and they die, they mark that off as a COVID death.
That is by definition from the CDC. That was a decision that was made early on.
90% of the people put on ventilators died. 90%. You have a better chance with Russian roulette. Literally. Okay?
Protocol.
That's a protocol. So listen, and not only is it a protocol, but they get paid to do it. A lot. When you go to the hospital, you get tested. They get paid more. When you get admitted for COVID, they get paid more. When they put you on remdesivir, they get paid more. When you get ventilated, they get paid more. When you die, they get paid more. This is perverse.
We cannot even begin to describe the tragedy brought upon thousands of innocent people. Not only were they administered on false pretenses and treated wrongly on purpose, not only were their chances of ever getting out alive reduced to almost zero, they were also denied visits from their loved ones. They were denied food and water. As they became underfed and dehydrated to the point of dying, They were denied physical consoling contact with loved ones. They were denied a priest during their last hours. Their loved ones were denied access to medical records. The COVID scam, based on nothing more than politics, destroyed hundreds of thousands of lives, all because of incentives upon incentives, bonus upon bonus, piles of money upon piles of money. Even the coroners received government money if they put COVID-19 on death certificates. The cabal had thought of everything. The one place you should be safe, the one place where you should be handled with love, care, and compassion, had turned into a prison camp. A place where you are most welcome, as you are worth $100,000. That is, if protocols are followed and you never leave that place alive. This sounds like a horror movie, don't you think? And we fully understand if you simply choose to refuse believing us. We too wish we were wrong, misled by conspiracy theorists and their crazy stories. But unfortunately, we lost dear friends who experienced this all the way to the bitter end. We will give you a few examples. This was our dear friend, Veronica Wolski. She became famous on social media as a freedom advocate who spent every weekend on a bridge in Chicago, putting up her banners with slogans that made people think. She made them with great love and care. She was always there, no matter how cold the weather. Drivers would honk and wave, letting her know she was not alone in her passionate fight against the cabal. We were in contact via Messenger. She sent us Q bracelets to hand out at our events. She was ever so proud to meet General Flynn, our hero, who never gave up fighting for the rights and liberties of the American people. We were so happy for her, and so proud. One day she wrote us how tired and weary she felt, and how much physical effort it cost to be on that bridge every weekend. She had trouble breathing. She started taking ivermectin, but was unfortunately administered to Chicago's Resurrection Hospital. Her every wish was denied, from continuing treatment with ivermectin to seeing family and friends. Veronica was put on remdesivir, which she had repeatedly refused. Her power of attorney, Nancy Ross, was removed by hospital security on several occasions. Even General Flynn tried to intervene and get her out. They got to the point where an ambulance was waiting to transfer Veronica to another hospital. All the care she needed was there. But at the very last moment, the hospital refused to authorize her release. Veronica didn't stand a chance and died all alone as a medical prisoner in a Catholic hospital. Her official cause of death? COVID-19. One of our Dutch friends, Dennis, nearly lost his wife Lisa due to maltreatment in the Jeroen Bos Hospital in Den Bosch, the Netherlands. She went in for hyperventilation and back pain. The first thing the doctor did was a nose swab. The PCR ran 44 cycles, something Dennis found out later after questioning the doctor. With a 100% chance of getting a false positive, she indeed got labeled positive and was treated as a COVID patient from that moment on. Her back pain and hyperventilation were completely ignored. Then, on day two, Dennis was asked for consent to put Lisa on Regencov. Dennis did some quick research and said no, absolutely not. What the doctors hadn't told him was that Regencov is an investigational drug. It is experimental. According to the FDA, it can only be used in a case of emergency and only as post-exposure prophylaxis therapy, which means only after exposure to the virus as damage control. It will keep you out of the hospital, or so the FDA claims. In other words, And please remember this, for it may one day save your life. Regencov is an experimental drug that may only be used for people, not patients, people who have been in close contact with COVID patients but who do not have COVID symptoms themselves just yet, or only mild to moderate ones. These people should be tested by means of a PCR test, and then, if they too come out as positive, and if they are at high risk of developing severe COVID-19, including hospitalization or death, only then can they be given this experimental drug called Regencov. Short recap. If you have been close to a COVID patient, as in less than 6 feet away, you could very well be contaminated with this killer virus, okay? Now, even though this killer virus has never been isolated and thus proven to exist, even though there were never excess mortality rates until they started the vaccination program, that is, more about which in the next episode, even though the official amount of casualties was equal to that of a mild flu, even though the PCR was never meant to be used for diagnostic purposes, and it cannot tell you whether you have COVID or not, even though we now know that too many cycles will give you a false positive outcome, even though, according to the FDA, you may not be in a hospital setting when the emergency use of Regencov may be considered, but simply at home with no COVID symptoms at all or just mild ones, even though you must belong to that small group of people who are at high risk for developing severe COVID-19, including hospitalization or death, only then may the use of Regencov be considered. So, my question in this particular case is, why on earth did this doctor want to give Lisa Regencov? She was in the hospital already! Let's stick to the almighty protocol here, shall we? What this doctor did was not allowed by any of the authorities. As a matter of fact, it was and is a criminal offense. Why give Lisa a COVID damage control drug when she went in with back pain and hyperventilation complaints? And how on earth can this drug be used in emergency situations when you are still at home with hardly any symptoms? Define emergency, please. And finally, how can the person put on Regencov be closely monitored by a doctor when he or she is not in a hospital? Let's take a look at the possible side effects of this drug, shall we? It can cause anaphylaxis, a serious allergic reaction that can cause death within minutes or hours. It can cause serious abnormalities in one's heartbeat and blood pressure. My! But wait for it. The other known adverse reactions are chills, fever, difficulty breathing, nausea, chest pain, muscle pain, headache, fatigue, sore throat, and weakness. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? These are the identical alleged COVID symptoms. My, what a coincidence! So, if you die from Regencov, how easy is it to put COVID-19 on your death certificate? Is this why fully vaccinated people are not allowed to be treated with Regencov? Because it's bad for statistics? Oh, and here's another one to ponder. If Regencov is not to be used in the case of COVID variants, but only for the original COVID-19, can anybody please tell us how variants are detected in a person? If the PCR is unreliable for diagnosis, period, do you really believe it can be used to detect variants? Had Lisa been given Regencov, as suggested by a doctor, her chances of ever getting out of that hospital alive would have been, well, basically zero. Her cause of death would have been COVID-19. After all, she had all the symptoms, right? Thank God, both Dennis and Lisa know enough about the COVID scam to be on high alert. What happened next? On day 3, she was given morphine. Do you know how hard it is to get morphine in the Netherlands, even in a hospital? I do, from personal experience. You have to be in so much pain and beg for it, and even then, still most doctors refuse to give it, as it is highly addictive. True, absolutely. So why the heck give it to alleged COVID patients? After 2 days, Dennis insisted they take her off the morphine. Long story short, after a week in the hospital's COVID department with no fluids and no IV, she was completely exhausted, dehydrated, and ready to die. Dennis and a friend insisted she be moved to the ICU, where she was put on a ventilator that took over her breathing. Within a day in the ICU, she was diagnosed with Guillain-Barré. Whether or not this is correct is still to be seen. After 6 days in the ICU and 4 more weeks of physical therapy, Dennis could finally take her home. If he hadn't been so insisting, he asked for blood test results and medical reports every single day to the point of driving the nurses and doctors crazy, we doubt Lisa would have made it. Another dear friend from the Netherlands, Arjuna, was hospitalized on November 17, 2021. His complaints? Exhaustion. His wife Nora bought a saturation meter and measured a low 65. She called their family doctor, who immediately called for an ambulance. On the way to the hospital, Arjuna was given oxygen, to which he responded very well. Within 15 minutes, his saturation level had gone up to 90. Arjuna was administered to the local hospital, where he was tested for COVID and found positive. But all seemed well. With just a bit of oxygen, his saturation level remained steady just over 90. If only the story had ended there. That night, Arjuna was put on a cocktail of norepinephrine, rucuronium, propofol, sufentanil, and midazolam. Enough to put an elephant down. Arjuna was put on a ventilator and sank into a deep coma. Why? Nobody knows, except the doctors, who refused to tell what happened that night. On day 2, a doctor called Nora and asked for her consent to treat Arjuna with Regencov. She said it was an experimental drug, but didn't add any information. Nora said no and insisted Arjuna be treated according to the Math Plus protocol, but her request was denied. Once again, why for God's sake suggest Regencov? Arjuna was in the hospital, on oxygen, and on a ventilator. That's 3 times a no-go, according to the officials. That same night, Nora was told by a nurse that they had deepened her husband's comatose state, as he had started to breathe by himself. Instead of taking him off the ventilator, they had given him more narcotics. Nora then talked to another doctor and repeated her Math Plus protocol request, but he too said he had to follow the hospital's protocol. On day 7, Arjuna was transferred to the Jeroen Bos Hospital in Den Bosch, the same hospital that had almost killed our friend Lisa. Arjuna was given more midazolam, fentanyl, and other sedatives. On day 14, the doctors turned the ventilator off. Arjuna died, leaving Nora behind, devastated and inconsolable. His official cause of death? COVID-19. Then there's the adventure of Benjamin Gord. He got into a single car crash, early 22. When he came to and realized what had happened, he checked his arms and legs, and all seemed just fine. After about 10 minutes, help arrived. The first thing they did was give him an injection.
Take a syringe, an EMT take a syringe out, and started coming at me, and I said, no, what the? And he said, just gonna calm me down, boss. It went in, and it went black.
7 hours later, he woke up in a hospital on a ventilator. As he remembered, he had come out of the car crash unharmed. He pulled out the ventilator tube, the IV in his arm, and the catheter. He got up and went to a desk with some nurses and asked,
why did you put me on a ventilator? Does it look like I'm having any trouble whatsoever breathing? I'm standing?
The answer was, because you have COVID.
And I said, even if that's true, that you tested me for COVID, that ventilator is a late stage, last resort, hyper-invasive thing that you've done. What did you give to me? First thing she says is propofol. And I said, oh, the thing that killed Michael Jackson, great. And then she mentioned fentanyl and morphine.
It was only because of his strong attitude that he left that hospital alive. He then tried to reach as many people as possible on social media to tell his shocking tale and to share his warning.
Be extra, extra careful no matter what you do.
Yeah.
Avoid the hospital.
As we edit this voiceover, thousands of people are literally being murdered by doctors and nurses. And to be honest, if you had told us this a year ago, we would not have believed you. But now, we have seen this living nightmare up close and personal. Not only that, we receive these horrid accounts on a daily basis from across the world. Do you want to hear healthcare whistleblowers? Do you want to know what you can do to save your life or that of a loved one? Then follow me to part 23.